And I don't say that to impress anybody, but it impresses the heck out of me. Because on April 24th of 1984, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I didn't want to live and I didn't want to die, and I didn't know who to call. Who was I going to call? I knew nothing about alcoholism. I wasn't an alcoholic, and I knew nothing about AA, and I didn't cry out for AA, help me. On April 24th of 1984, I cried out a prayer, God help me. On April 25th of 1984, I walked into a treatment facility. I was in treatment 28 days. I learned two things. I learned that I'm an alcoholic and I belong in these meetings. Everything I need is right here in the meetings in the cover of that book. I'm a firm believer in this. I really try to keep this thing simple. You know, it's a very simple program. You know, I don't want to ever get too smart. I like staying dumb. You know, and I keep it as simple as I can. You know, I don't need to change anything about it. I like everything about it. Like I said, you know. I don't have to pick up a drink to louse things up. I can louse things up sober, you know. So, as they were talking tonight, he said, you know, it was funny tonight because Don Menz is my home group, and the secretary asked me, what meeting is it? I haven't been to Don Menz in a while, you know. Newberg's my home group, and is one of my home groups, and I haven't been there in a while either, you know, But you know, I work nights on Thursdays I'm at the Northeast Pre-Release Prison. My home group is a woman's meeting, so. You know, thank God for AA. You know what else can I say? You know, it says in our freedom letter, our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. And I believe that. But I believe Alcoholics Anonymous' primary purpose is to save people's lives. Because that's what it's doing today for me. It's saving my life. This is life and death. An old-timer told me once, I was sitting in these meetings, and an old-timer, he was sitting, I don't know, right across from me, but I think two seats down. And he said, kid, hear with your eyes, not with your ears. You know, and how true is that to the alcoholic? You know, I don't know about you, but I'm an alcoholic. As soon as I open my mouth up, I tell a lie. So don't listen to me, just watch me, you know. That's what my wife tells me. Every time I open my mouth up, I'm telling another lie, you know. So, you know, so, but, and I came in these meetings, I kept my eyes open. I saw a friend of mine die from the results of alcohol and drugs. I'm not talking about friends when I was out there using. I'm talking about friends since I came into AA. The very first person that I tried to sponsor a little bit over 24 years ago, we buried, 23 and a half years ago, we buried because he died of an overdose of cocaine. And I'm here tonight. I don't know about you, but I feel good. You better believe I love Alcoholics Anonymous saving my life. But I can tell you more stories. There was a point in time I used to say in my lead, there's more people that I sponsored that are dead than that are sober. I don't say that anymore. Nobody comes up and asks me to sponsor them, you know. But I talk about, I bring up one other story because this guy was a friend of mine. I grew up with this guy and he was just like me. And in the 24 years and 5 months and 5 days I was sober, he was in prison four different times, you know. I literally tried everything I could do to get this guy sober. I literally tried to shove the big book down his throat. It taught me a lesson, you know, that I can't get nobody sober. You know, I don't have that power. I can't get people sober. I can only carry the message. God gets people sober. I could only carry the message. And the last time this guy went out, he hit a girl on Detroit Avenue, and she pinned her leg against the pole, and the girl lost her leg. And I was visiting him while he was in county jail, and he snapped. He couldn't handle what he did. He just lost it. You know, this guy. You know, he was like me. All he ever wanted to do, all I ever wanted to do when I went out and drank was to have fun. That's all I ever wanted to do was to have a little bit of fun. And I believe that's all he ever wanted. He didn't say, well, one day I'm going to take a girl's leg off, you know. You know, and he was in bad shape. He was having seizures all the time. He had a couple of strokes. And while he was in county jail, his mother called me up and says, Fred, could you come and take me down to St. Vincent Charity? I guess the county jail called her up, and she wanted me to drive her down to see her son. And I thought I was driving her down to see her son. And I went down there. And when we got into his room, he was at St. Vincent Charity. He was in a coma on a life support system, handcuffed to a bed. He couldn't move. He couldn't go nowhere, but he was handcuffed to bed, and I felt this guy pain. See, in my message, in my lead, I talk about two things. I talk about never forget, and I talk about feelings, you know. you know the feeling. You know the feeling I'm talking about. The feeling I'm talking about is that feeling. You know that new alcoholic. I'll never forget my first AA meeting, or my first beginnings in my AA. That sign in Newberg, watch while you're beginning. The result of man's himself. It makes so much sense. You know, I'll never forget my beginnings. You know that feeling I'm talking about. You see that new guy. You know when the secretary gets up at the meeting, asking anybody here at their first meeting or first week in the program, and you see that new guy or new girl raise her hand, and you look in that new guy or new girl's eyes, and you see that loneliness and that pain and that guilt and the shame and the remorse. Just look. It's there. You'll see it. I know what it's like. And then after the meeting, you go shake that new guy's hand or new girl's hand. You say, keep coming back. You don't have to live the way you're living. You see that little bit of hope. That's the gift. If you haven't done that, you don't know what I'm talking about. That's the gift. Now, that's the feeling I'm talking about. And I felt this guy didn't have his eyes, but I felt this guy's pain. He was struggling to die, and they were keeping him alive. This guy did not want to live. I know by visiting him and talking, he just didn't have it. He just didn't have the fight in him anymore. And I just said to his mother, I wish they'd leave it in God's hands, you know. She asked me to talk to the priest with her, and we had to talk to the priest, and then we had to get permission from the county when you're in prison or jail to... You can't do nothing without their permission. We finally got permission from the county to get him off this machine. And 2 days later, this guy died handcuffed to a bed. And I'm here tonight. I don't know about you, but I feel good. You better believe I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It's saving my life. Thank God for AA. Thank God for AA. You hear with your eyes, not with your ears.
Right.
You hear with your eyes. And you know what we had to do tonight before the meeting started? This is what we had to do tonight before the meeting started. We had to ask people to shut their pagers and their cell phones off. Give me a break! Without Alcoholics Anonymous, I have nothing. I have nothing. Man, am I that important? Do I got to take a cell phone into an AA meeting? When did I get important? Without Alcoholics Anonymous, I have nothing. And I also believe Alcoholics Anonymous is a miracle, magic, whatever you want to call it, because I read a story. And this is an amazing story. And every time I read this story, I get a feeling inside, another one of those feelings. I don't know about you, but when I read this story, this is an amazing story. And this story is about a doctor that met a stockbroker in 1935. Wow. Every time I just say those two things, it overwhelms me. Two guys got together one night. One guy thought he'd share his experience and strength. He couldn't tell nobody else. He had to tell another drunk the way he felt. And Alcoholics Anonymous began. Wow. I don't know about you, but I feel good. I'm a member of that fellowship. And the same thing that happened to that doctor in 1935 happened to Fred Giacomazzo in 1984. I was introduced to another alcoholic. He shared experience, strength, and hope, and I thought he knew more about me than I did myself, and I started to listen. And if I didn't do anything on early in my beginnings, I did listen. Why I listened, who knows? Maybe I was sick and tired of being sick. Maybe I didn't want to live the way I was living. Who knows? But I listened. And what that man did that day, I'm going to try to do tonight. He told me what it was like, what happened, what it's like today in a general way. And before I do that, I'd like to say a little prayer, and you could join me in a serenity prayer if you like. God, I pray for the strength, the wisdom, knowledge, your will, and the power to carry it out, to carry the suffering alcoholic and practice these principles in all my affairs. And God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I don't know when I picked up my first drink, you know. I didn't think, well, I better write this down. I might need it someday, you know. Some people could get up here and say at the age of five, their dad gave them beer at the age of five and they started guzzling. I don't know what I was doing at 35 when I was 5 years sober. So I can't tell you what I was doing at 5 years of age. But I go back to the age of 15 years of age. I grew up in the hippie years, you know, and everything else that went with it. I had hair halfway down my back and everything else that went with it. And at the age of 15, there was a fad going around called Boone's Farm Apple Wine. You know? And I wanted to fit in, I wanted to be accepted, I wanted to go out with my friends and have a little bit of fun, and we decided to go out and get some of this wine. And I got it, and I drank, and I got sick, and I puked, and I liked it so much, I went back the next day and the next day, and I was in trouble right from the start. I didn't have to wait and work my way into trouble. I was in trouble right from the start, you know. And at the age of 15, I wanted to go out with my friends and have a little bit of fun. At the age of 30, I was sitting on a curb, just sold my car. I pawned my brother's car. I got his bank book with $5 in it. I cashed a couple of checks of my mom and dad, and I got my grandmother's wedding ring sitting in a pawn shop. Now, that ain't the first time I did it, but it was the last. Now, I can tell you all the stories from the age of 15 to the age of 30 that got me to that curb. And believe me, I used to do that. Early on, there have been times early on in my beginning, my first couple of years of leading, there were times I led for an hour and 45 minutes, you know. Until I think about that today, you know, that's amazing. I can't believe I did talk that long, you know. But I mean, you know, I never said to myself, oh, well, I'm going to go out and lead for an hour and 45 minutes. If you want to blame somebody, you know, you could always, when you're done praying and I talk to God and ask God why he let so long, you know, because I don't know. What's the time limit? You know, there's some meetings out there today, you know, you'll go to a meeting, some meetings out there, I don't know about on the east side, but I know on the west side, there's some meetings out there on the west side, not the chairperson that asked you to lead, the secretary will come up to you before the lead, and he'll say, could you cut your lead, make it about 25 to 30 minutes, we like to get home early. Give me a break, tell that to the new guy that has nowhere to go. I can imagine sitting in a bar one night and say, hey, can you close the bar an hour early? I want to get home. I got to get home early. Give me a break. Give me a break. Without A, I have nothing. But I bring up a couple stories that got me to my last drunk because I keep the door open. It says to keep the door open. I keep it open. And one of the stories, I'm 17 years of age. I got hair halfway down my back. I can't even get started in the 10th grade. I'm getting kicked out of every school my mom and dad are sending me. My dad comes up to me, and like I said, I didn't want no part of school, and school didn't want no part of me, so my dad came up to me at 17 years of age and said he could give me a job working in a warehouse, making $6.50 an hour. That was 37 years ago, and I wanted this job. And the only way I could get this job, he said, Fred, you got to cut your hair. And I wasn't going to cut my hair, because if I cut my hair, I ain't going to have no friends, you know, and I really believe that. Back then, if you didn't have long hair, you weren't cool or whatever, I don't know. But I wasn't about to cut my hair. My dad and mom came with a suggestion. He said, Fred, all you got to do is cut your hair and take the job, and when you go out your friends, you can put on a long wig. I can imagine me put on a long wig and going out. That wasn't me, you know. I never had that in my thought in my mind, I'm going to put on a long wig. So I came with a suggestion of my own. I curled my hair up to the curler pin and put it short when you went to work like that for 2 years. See, I didn't need you people. I didn't need anybody. See, I wasn't hurting. I wasn't hurting. No, I'm just hurting me. Nobody else. Just me. You know, and now I know I'm drinking every day because I'm working with guys at 30 years of age and they're going to the bar and ordering shots and beers and ordering sandwiches. And I'm ordering shots and beers and forgetting the sandwiches and cutting work just like I did school. So the responsibility school couldn't put there. See, work couldn't put there. See, because I had a disease called alcoholism. And I believe that tonight because I read the book. And it said something like this in the book. If I put one drink in my system, this phenomenal craving, this obsession thing. If I don't believe anything tonight, I believe that tonight. Because every time I drink, I pass out, locked up, or whatever. And now this job gets fed up with me because I'm taking the wig off at lunchtime and I'm not wearing it to work. So they fire me after 2 years. So the guy who doesn't need anybody that's running his life fine, his dad comes up to me and says he can give me a better job in the trucking industry. He's on the truck dock. And my money's almost double and I'm spending all that money. I'm spending all my parents' money. I'm in all kind of trouble and I don't want to get in trouble. But the trouble got to the point where my mom and dad had to sell their house to keep me out of prison. And my life's a mess. And I don't know what to do, and I don't know where to go. Where am I going to go? Who am I going to call? Now I'm 26 years of age, and I'm living on a park bench off of West Boulevard. And I'm living on this park bench. And my whole world's falling apart at this time. My job is in jeopardy because the company I'm working for is ready to close up. I'm pending my 6th DWI. And my whole world's falling apart, and I'm living on this park bench, and I don't know where to go, and I don't know what to do, and my grandfather died. And my mom comes and says, come and be with the family till the funeral's over with. And I had a cousin that went to Rosary Hall at the time. It was 2 years sobriety. He was going to a lot of meetings. And he was a big guy. As soon as I walked in the house, he grabbed a homie, threw me up against the wall, and he said, Fred, when are you going to do something about your drinking? And I looked at him, I said, mind your own business. I don't have a drinking problem. I'm not an alcoholic. And what is an alcoholic? Powerless over alcohol, life of man. My life was a wreck. My life was a mess. My life was in shambles. My life's unmanned today, and it's the best it's ever been. I can live with that. That's a pretty word. I remember when Faye used to say that at KD at Newberg, when he, after the meeting, how Faye would get up and talk, and he would say that life of man, that's a pretty word for an alcoholic. You know, how true that is. I come, man, that is a pretty good. My life was a wreck. At this time, like I said, my nickname was Black Velvet. I carried it everywhere. When you had 6 DWIs, I was sleeping on a park bench, but I didn't have a drinking problem. And you know what he did? He walked away. He didn't say, let's do an intervention on him. He didn't say, tell my mom and dad I wasn't ready. He didn't say, let's put him in a happy. He just told my mom and dad I wasn't ready yet. And I thank God he did that. Because I see A like a revolving door. More people come to Alcoholics Anonymous and go back out than you do stay. You know that saying, keep coming back? It's harder to keep coming back than it is to stay. And I had to beat my head another 4 years. At that time, I didn't think I was an alcoholic, but I did think I was a little nuts, you know. Like I said, and everything's falling apart. I'm pending that 6 DWI, and at the time it was in Rocky River. And at that time, there was a blind judge in Rocky River, and he didn't like people that had DWIs. He would put people in prison because they had 2 DWIs, and I had 6. And I told my mom, I don't think I am an alcoholic, but I do think I'm a little nuts. And I went to psychiatric treatment. I went into a psych ward at St. Vincent Charity. I went into the psych ward there. And I've been in a few psychiatric hospitals since I've been in the program. That might have been one of the best. They had a ping pong table there, a pool table there, were giving me free drugs. They literally had it made, you know. And they had to kick me out of there, and they did. Now I got to go to court in Rocky River, and I'm living at the time, I'm back with my mom and dad, and they're living in North Olmsted, and I'm working at East 178th in St. Clair from 5 o'clock in the afternoon to 1 o'clock in the morning. And I walk in this courtroom, the lawyer that I had was the bailiff kid's godfather. You know, I used to think I was nickel king, double cool. Oh, I sat in a lot of jails, but I never went to prison. You know, it cost my mom and dad dearly to keep me out of prison. And I'm not talking material things. It cost happiness from their smile, joy from their hearts, and peace from their eyes to keep me out of prison. And I walked in this courtroom, this was a blind judge, but he looked at me and said, you're going to give me 3 years loss of license, 2 years probation, you got to see a probation officer once a week, 60 days in jail, and a $312 fine. I was ready to fire my lawyer in court. I told the lawyer what I thought of him. I told the bailiff what I but I didn't tell the judge. And I'm yelling at that lawyer and that bailiff and I'm telling him he ain't gonna even give me my license for back and forth to work. 26 years of age, you gotta have some type of responsibility in your life. And the judge called me back and the judge came here and he kept everything except the 60 days in jail. He suspended, he said something in my ears popped open. He said, Fred, you could have your license back in 90 days. And I said, what do I got to do? He says, all you got to do is go to 3 AA meetings a week. I told the judge he could keep my license, and he did. I wasn't an alcoholic. I didn't have a drinking problem. What is an alcoholic? Powerless over alcoholic. 26 years of age, living in North Olmsted, working East 178th in St. Clair from 5 o'clock in the afternoon to 1 o'clock in the morning. You know who's driving me back and forth to work? My mother. And that's the way I lived. That was my life. You better believe I loved Alcoholics Anonymous. It's saving my life. Thank God for AA. Now I want to bring you up to my last drunk. Now I'm 30 years of age, and I'm living in Parma, and I'm working in Ravenna, and I don't even have a car, you know. Life on man, that's a pretty word for an alcoholic. My life was a wreck. And I told my mom and dad why I didn't have a car. I said, Mom, Dad, I don't have a why I'm missing work. I said, I told them I'm missing work because I don't have a car. 2 weeks prior to my last drunk, my mom and dad went out and bought me a car for $325, and they told me to go live in it. And I'm living in my car, and I hadn't taken a bath for a couple of weeks. I stunk, and I'm dirty, and I'm sick, and I hear through the grapevine that my mom and dad are going to New York to visit my sister. I called my mom on the phone. I said, Ma, please. Well, you and Dad are in New York. Could I just come home and get a little bit of rest? What I would have done for a little bit of rest. You know, when I think about that, I was in treatment 28 days. They made me write down a lot of stuff. They asked me a lot of questions. They even made me do a fourth and fifth step when I was in treatment. And all that stuff that I've written down, I still have it up in the attic in a filing cabinet. You know, I used to look at it occasionally, haven't looked at it over 15 years. And I don't remember all those questions, but this is another one. I'll never forget this question. This was one of the questions they asked me, and I'll never forget this one. We were sitting around group, and it got to me, and they said, Fred, why are you really here? Why are you really here? And I believe with all the honesty at that time, I believe I told them this truth. I said, I'm there just to get some sleep. What I would have done for some sleep. Wow. You know, that's not what I was looking for. You know, there's been a lot of nights I've been in AA, a lot of nights in AA that I haven't got much sleep. But now I can lay down in that pillow and feel that peace. That's the gift. If you haven't felt that, you don't know what I'm talking about. I'm a member of that. I don't know about you, but I feel good. I feel good. You better believe I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It's saving my life. You know, I remember early on in my sobriety, man. Early on, I couldn't put 2 hours. It took me a long time before I could sleep through the night. You know, I'll go to a halfway house and I'll talk to a guy there, and he's been in there a couple weeks, and he'll say, "Oh, I slept through the night, man." It took me a long time. Thank God for AA, man. There was midnight meetings. I hid out in AA for a long time. You know. But that Saturday, my mom said, okay, that Saturday, my mom and dad left in New York. That car they bought me for $325, I sold for $75. Then Sunday came along, and my boss, I got to be at work at 9 o'clock at night, I don't think I can make it. And all he said to me is, Fred, if you're not here tonight, I don't know if I can guarantee your job. I said, I don't think I'll make it. And he repeated it, so I said, I'll borrow my brother's car, and I grabbed a bottle of Black Velvet. And I went to that guy that died handcuffed to a bed, was living in an attic in Bree, and all I remember is going to that house and drinking that Black Velvet until I passed out. I don't remember that guy being there. He might have been doing his own thing. He might even have been out of town at the time. He worked for a moving company. And then Monday came along, and I'm sick, and I ain't got no money, and I don't know where to go, and I don't know who to call. But I got my brother's bank book, and he's got $50 in his bank. I go to his bank, and I take $45 out, and I go down to 55th and Woodland, and I get something. I had to be sick. And then Tuesday came along, and I'm sick, and I ain't got no money, and I don't know where to go, and I don't know who to call. Where am I going to go? Who am I going to call? So I drive down to 55th in my brother's car, and I pawn my brother's car. And I took a rapid back to this house, and I'll never forget this. I walked for a while. I remember being on that rapid train. You know, my life was a mess. I hadn't taken a bath in a couple of weeks. I stunk, and I was dirty. I walked up that steps, and I remember Matt sitting at that round kitchen table. And every time I tell the story, it's like me seeing him sitting there. And on that kitchen table was that bottle of Black Velvet, still that much left in it. I walked up the steps. I was shaking. I was scared. As soon as he said, Fred, you better drink that. As soon as he said those words, I ran out of that house, and I ran from that house to this bar, and I cried out, God, there's got to be something better. There's just got to be something better. And I didn't know who to call. Who was going to call? The only person I could think to call was a guy I went to school with. I was godfather to one of his daughters. I called this guy on the phone. I said, Ralph, I owed him money at the time. I said, Ralph, can you help me? And he said, you know what he said? He said he couldn't help me. I don't know what you call it, total helplessness, total despair, deep down in your guts, crying for help and hearing no help available. I don't want to ever have to go through that again. Then I said, Ralph, put your wife on the phone. I said, Mary Ellen, you got to help me. She said she couldn't help me, and I didn't know what to do. And I don't know how long I sat in there in that bar, but I don't want to ever forget this next phone call. I just told you what happened prior to this phone call. And you know who's on the other end of that line? My mother. And you know what she said? She said, come home, and if I go home, it's going to be the same. Every day I went home. When is it going to be different? Day in and day out, I went home. And I must have told her I had no way to get home. And she said she'd pick me up. And I didn't want her to pick me up where I was. And I walked to the, it was a bowling alley at the time. We had like this little ledge, and I sat on this ledge. Hadn't even seen the step yet. Didn't know anything about the step. But that day on that ledge, I took an inventory. Probably the best inventory I ever took in my life. And you know that inventory. If you took in that inventory, you know what I'm talking about. You know the inventory I'm talking about. The inventory I'm really talking about is that main inventory where you look down in the deep end of your guts. And you see the real... I looked down in the deep end of my guts and I seen the real Fred Jackson. And I didn't like anything about me. I don't want to ever forget that. I hope on on September 30th of 2008, I hope I pray this morning like I prayed on April 25th of 24th of 1984, the same exact way. And I noticed him, the real pig, a real disgrace, and I prayed, God, please help me, please help me. And on April 25th of 1984, those two prayers that I answered, cried out for were answered immediately. He didn't say, come back a week from today or we'll do this thing tomorrow. I walked in this men's office, this lady looked at me, she said, this is a 28-day program, and I broke down, I started to cry. And I said to her, that's not enough time. Just let me stay. In the back of my mind, I thought I was going to go in there and die peacefully. See, I gave up. I surrendered. I just couldn't go on no more. And you know what she said to me? She said, things will get better. And when I ran from that house to that bar, I cried out, God, there's got to be something better. And you know what I'm going to tell you all tonight? From that day to this day, things have gotten better. Not at the pace I like it. Not at the pace I wanted to be. But if I want to be honest with you tonight, I can tell you a whole lot better. A whole lot better. Then that second prayer, God help me, was answered in the form of a book. A book. She handed me this big blue book. She said this program is based on this book. And on the cover of that book it said Alcoholic Anonymous. And I don't know about you, but I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm an alcoholic. And I believe on April 25th of 1984, I believe I received the greatest gift that any alcoholic could receive. And I'm a firm believer in that. I believe this is a gift. This is a gift. I didn't do nothing to earn this, and I ain't assumed to do nothing to earn. How do you pay AA back? How can you pay Alcoholic Anonymous back? Every time you put in AA, you get back tenfold and more. Every time you give more. Wow. You're telling me every time I give, I'm going to get more? How about you? But I feel good. Where do I start? Where do I start? I'm a member of that fellowship. I think about that. You know, like I said, I hear what you, like you said, you hear with your eyes, not with your ear. You know, come in these rooms, just sit in these rooms. You know, I sit in these rooms and I watch those, you know, those guys that come in the meeting and they'll sit way in the back. As soon as the lead's over with, they'll run out of here. They'll run out of here. Why would I treat my alcoholic and my A any way different than I did my drinking? Why would I treat it any different? I never went into a bar and said, oh, I'm going to only have a couple and I'm going to go home. Why would I, oh, I only want a couple things you have to offer here and I'm going to go home. That ain't me. I don't want just a piece of the pie. I want the whole pie, the whipped cream on top, the cherry. I want it all. I'll even take yours if you let me. That's me. That's me. You know, and that's what I did. You know, I'm selfish, I'll be honest with you. I just don't want a part of it. I want all that good stuff. You know, if you just want not drinking and going to meetings, I'll guarantee you'll stay sober the rest of your life. I'll guarantee that. I'll even go one farther than that. You don't even have to come to our meetings. Just don't drink, you're not going to get drunk. Just don't drink, you're not going to get drunk. But I don't want all that good stuff. You know that good stuff it says in that book? It's in there. It's in there, and it happened. I know it happened. I just told you I was going to share what it was like, what happened, what it was like. I just share what it was like, what happened. I want to share a little bit of what it's like today. It's AA's attraction rather than a promotion. I'm not here to promote AA. You know, I'm just not. Here are the steps we took. You know, like I said, you hear what your eyes bought. Watch that person. You know that person I'm talking about, that guy. You know the guy with that smile. And that, you know, I want that smile and that gleam. You know the smile and the gleam. Look at that guy that's got that smile and the gleam in his eye. How do you get that smile and the gleam? I want that. The last date I went on with the girl prior to when I came away was 3 years. I couldn't get a girl to go out with me, you know. That's another thing I have a hard time with. You know, a guy will just get out of Keating Center for, he'll be out for about a month. You know, say, oh, I can't go to a meeting tonight. I got to stay home or take my girlfriend out. Girl, give me a break, you know. Yeah, I couldn't get a girl to go out with me and call her a girlfriend, you know, but I was working on a truck one night, and a guy came up to me and said, Fred, why don't you take my cousin out? I jumped at the chance. Nobody out there. And I took her out, and on that day, I wet my pants. The next day, he came to me and said, my cousin don't want to see you no more. Girls don't want guys that drink like pigs, and girls are guys that don't take baths, and girls don't want guys that wet their pants. Now, maybe you got those girls, but I sure didn't, you know. October 24th of 1987, I was married. Not only is she my wife, she's my best friend. Now, I might not be her best friend, but she's mine. You know. I met Mary when I was 2.5 years sober. 2 years and 7 months sober, I met Mary. And at 2 years and 7 months sober, I knew to do 3 things. That's it. Just 3 things I knew to do at 2 years and 7 months sober. I knew not to drink. I knew to come to these meetings. I knew to shake people's hand. That's it. That's all I knew. So I met Mary, and what else? The only place I asked her out, and the only place I think you'd take in to take her was in an AA meeting. And my first date was in an AA meeting. And you know, that night I led the meeting, and she still married me. That amazes me. I still can't believe that today. You know, I look back early on in my beginning when I was dating Mary. We were dating for about 3 months. Now I'm 2 years and 10 months sober, and we're dating for about 3 months. And she comes up to me one night after we were dating. She said, "Fred, have you ever bought deodorant, cologne?" I never bought deodorant, cologne in my life. Why would I start now? You know, I never bought that in my life. You know, it amazes me. Some people, you can go to some of these places. You know, these guys, these alcoholics today, they come in, they got a wardrobe of clothes, you know, and they got a car, you know. The requirement to get into a halfway house today is you got to have a car, a cell phone, and you're welcome. Come on in. You're welcome. You know. You know. I had nothing. You know. What? You know. After I was done praying in the morning, I used to say to God, "Please keep her in the fog. Don't let her know what she's got. Don't let her know what she's got." God. I'm blessed, man. I really am. God's been good to Fred Giacomazzo. How can I pay Alcoholics Anonymous back? Well, I can come to your meeting and put your chairs away and lead your meetings and secretary meetings and charity meetings. I can come here and be the best AA you want me to. I can dance you with sobriety room just like that. I don't believe I work my program in an AA room. I work my program when I'm alone. I believe it's my thoughts and my actions. I don't believe this is an outside job. I believe it's an inside job. I don't believe it's how I look on the outside. It's how I feel on the inside. And I don't know about you, but I feel good. I feel good. I got to share this one story. I remember we got married and we were on our honeymoon. And we were going to Florida, and we were on a plane. And I got false teeth, you know. And early on, I used to take them. I don't hardly wear them anymore. She doesn't like that, but I used to take them out when we ate early on. And then we were on this plane, and we got a sandwich, and I got on this plane. I took my teeth out, I guess, and I ate the sandwich. And I must have fell asleep after I ate the sandwich. And I woke up, and I said, "Mira, I can't find my teeth." And I said, "I don't know where they're at." And about 15 minutes later, three aisles down, there was this little girl yelling out, "Mommy, Mommy, I found somebody's teeth." You know? November 18th of 1988, my wife was in labor for almost 26 hours. Her sponsor was there and my sponsor was there. See, my wife, when I met my wife and I introduced her to my sponsor, I said, "Dave, I met a girl." And Dave, I'm sorry I ever did that, because Dave said, "You know, if you have anything to do with this guy here, you got to go to those meetings over there." My wife's a member of Al-Anon. She's got a black belt in Al-Anon. Al-Anon's put me in the couch and in the basement lots of nights, you know. But her sponsor, my sponsor, was there. And she, like I said, she had a rough time, 26 hours. And they stayed up all night. I even slept. They used to give me a hard time about that early on. You were sleeping through it, and we were up. But the next morning, the doctor said, "We got to do a C-section right away." And they asked me, and they said I could come in there. And I was in there with my first time with born. Wow. I'll never forget that. How am I going to forget that? This kid's going to be 20 years of age this year. He gives me big hugs and kisses. He doesn't like to give me hugs and kisses anymore, but I make them. You know, and He's in his second year of college. His first year of college, he made the Honor Society, you know, 20%. His grade was 20% of the nation's, all the nation's freshman class. You know, how can I pay back? What is the price tag? I always think about that. What is the price tag? You know, what is the price tag? What is it? How many meetings is it? Is it 10,000 meetings? How many chairs? 30,000 chairs? How many drunks do I got to pick up? How many funerals do I got to go to? How many hospital visits? What is the price tag? What is the price tag? Every time I put in Alcoholics Anonymous, I give back tenfold. Every time I give more. There used to be a saying that used to go around in AA, and this was the saying, if you don't drink and come to these meetings long enough, it's going to get so good it's going to start to scare you. Wow. If you don't drink and come to these meetings long enough, it's going to get so good it's going to start to scare you. Another one of those things, I after I was done praying in the morning, I used to say to God, God, please scare me. Please scare me. I'd love to be scared. You know? I'll try anything. I'll try anything. After August 5th of 1990, I quit saying that prayer because my second son was born, and this Gianni's a maniac. This kid's a trip. This kid's just like me. This kid's a madman. Now I got a Gianni and a Mario running around. How can I pay Alcoholics Anonymous back? I can't pay it back at all. I could come to your meeting and put all your chairs away and leave your meeting secretary and cheer you. I could come here and be the best of you. I could get it. I don't believe I work my program either. I work my program when I'm alone. It's my thoughts and my action. I don't believe this is an outside job. I believe it's an inside job. It's not how I look on the outside. It's how I feel on the inside. And I don't know about you, but I feel good. I feel good. Three more stories. One's about my mom, my dad, and my sponsor. I don't want to get carried away tonight. You know, I can't get carried away, but I don't. I share three more stories, you know, like I said, because I don't believe AA is for me. I believe AA is for the people that love me. You know, at some meeting they'll ask, is there anybody we could pray for? You know, they'll ask at the meeting. And I always think about that. And you'll hear, oh, pray for this guy and pray for that guy. And, you know, that's fine. And then, you know, you pray, and then you'll hear some statements, oh, well, God looks out for alcoholics and babies, and I kind of believe that. But I understand today why he looks out for the alcoholic. So to protect the innocent victim. To protect the innocent victim, you know. I had 60 DWIs. That could have been six times I could have killed somebody. Hey, not for me. It ain't for me, it ain't for them. That's who we should be praying for, those innocent victims. If I go out and drink, everybody's in trouble. Everybody's in trouble. I was 3 months sober, and my mom came up to me, and she had that smile on her face, and I go, Mom, what's the matter? She said, you know what? Guess what, Fred? And I knew, I just felt it. And she goes, guess what? She says, you know what, Fred? I love you. I knew she loved me. I assumed she loved me. She was my mother. But at that point in time, in that moment, I felt that love. And if that's all I get out of Alcoholics Anonymous, that would be enough. That would have been plenty. I don't need any more. That would have been enough. And then she went on and said something, and I'll never forget this. I'll never forget this. She said, guess what, Fred? I don't have to do anymore. And I go, what, Mom? 3 months of sobriety. This is what she said. I don't have to go in my room and get down on my knees and pray that you'll be all right. 3 months of relief. 3 months. I don't have to go in my room and get down on my knees and pray that you'll be all right. Wow. Can we please shut our pagers and our cell phones off? Give me a break. Give me a break. I wonder how my mom feels tonight after 24 years, 5 months and 5 days. You know, there's been a lot of nights in Alcoholic Anonymous, and my mom's had a lot of, has been a lot more grateful for Alcoholic Anonymous than I've ever been. A lot of nights. And then I think about that. You know, my mom didn't pray for 1 year. She didn't pray for 5 years. She didn't pray for 10. She prayed for 16 years. 16 years. She didn't give up. She didn't say, well, it's not going to work. Day in, day out, she prayed. And through her prayers and the prayers of the people in this room, I received a gift. My mom didn't get a gift. I got the gift. See, I don't know about you, but 99 and 9 tenths of the time when I go to an AA meeting, when I leave there, I feel better. 99 and 9 tenths. There might be that 1 tenth of the time when I go to a meeting, when I leave there, I might not feel, and that's on me. Something might have happened or somebody might have said something. But that's on me. But 99 and 9 tenths. So what I get here, I better take out there, because if I don't, I'm cheating you and I'm cheating me, and most of all, I'm cheating God. So if I'm working with somebody, he's going in and out, I got to remember my mom never gave up. She didn't say, well, it's not going to work. And you believe, you know what I believe? I believe the greatest gift I could ever do for an alcoholic is get down on my knees and pray. That's it. That's the gift. That's the message. There's only one message to carry. There's only one message, and the message is the three pertinent ideals. That's the message. All I had to do was get up here and say, hey, I'm an alcoholic and could not manage my own life. B, no human power could relieve my alcohol. C, God could and would have taught. That's the message. There's no other message. That's the message. Now I'm 14 months sober. My dad had that smiling gleam. You know that smiling gleam I was talking about? That smiling. Could you imagine going to an AA meeting and everybody in the room sitting like this? Man, I got to be at another AA. Another night? Another night? I want that smiling gleam. How do you get that smiling, that gleam? I want that. And he had that smiling gleam. I looked at him. This is the same father used to say, if he was lying on the street dead, I'd be picking his pocket and taking the rings off his finger. And he had that smiling guy. I looked at him and said, yeah, what's the matter? And you know what he said? He said, he's the happiest man in the world. And I asked him why. He said, because I'm his son. Now, I'm not going to tell you I felt that happiness in the last 24 years and 5 months and 5 days, but that day I felt that happiness. And if that's all I got out of Alcoholics Anonymous, that would have been plenty. That would have been enough. That would have been enough. I don't need any more. You know what? Little bit over 4 or 5 years this Thanksgiving, and my dad passed away. And the morning that he passed away, I got to shave him the morning that he passed away. Wow. Now, everybody might think, oh, what's the big deal? That's a big deal. That's a big deal, because if I was out there using, when I was out there using, when my dad would go to the hospital, he didn't only take his checkbooks with him, he'd take his checkbooks and all his checks. And you know why I go and visit him? Why I go and visit him? Because I wanted to steal his checks. I don't know about you, but I feel good. I'm a member of that fellowship. Wow, how do I pay A back? How can I pay Alcoholic Anonymous back? You know, I always think, what is the greatest? You know, I always think to myself, since the longer I stay sober, And the more things that happen, I always think, what is the greatest gift that ever Fred Giacomazzo? You know, I received a lot of gifts, even when I was out there drinking, and I received a lot of gifts since sobriety. But what is the greatest gift that I ever received? I always think about that. What is the greatest gift? And the greatest gift that I ever received was Alcoholic Anonymous. Wow. What a gift. About 3 years ago, my sponsor was diagnosed with lung cancer, Dave Waldron. I don't know if I've ever met anybody who had more, did more for aid than he did. You know, this guy was so active, you know, it was amazing. As long as I'm living, he's never going to be dead. But a week before he died, his wife called, May called up Mary and said, Mary, Dave woke up this morning and asked me to take him to the hospital so he can die. I think about that. That's the same way I felt on April 25th of 1984. The same exact way. I just wanted to go somewhere. I just didn't have it anymore. I just couldn't live anymore. I just didn't have that fight anymore. I just wanted to go somewhere. And they told me, if you go to these meetings over here, Fred, your life will get better. I wonder if they tell all the patients, cancer patients in the world, if you go to those meetings over there, your life is going to get better. You know, we won't even have to open the doors. They'd be knocking the wall down to get into these rooms. He went to that hospital and he died. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I lived. See, I'm selfish. I really am. I believe on April 25th, and I believe in 1935, two drunks got together for one reason only. So Fred Giacomazzo could have it on April 25th of 1984. And it took from 1935 to 1984, you people to keep the doors open for me, and I thank you for that. And that tells me I have a responsibility to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not talking about the program, I'm talking about the fellowship. And I believe the only responsibility I have to this fellowship is to keep those doors open. Because I don't know who's going to need AA tomorrow, but if they do, I hope there's a place for them to go. Because I always think, where would I have gone on April 25th of 1984 if AA wasn't here? I would have had nowhere to go. Nowhere. Nowhere to go. Who knows, if my son might need it someday. I'll kill him before he does, you know. But I don't even have to, I don't even worry about that. I probably have to save his life. My wife got a black belt. I'd probably say, Mary, leave him alone. There's a place for him to go, you know. He got a black belt in Al-Anon. I want to close with this. My wife and my sons wrote a poem this April for my 24th year of sobriety. To be 24 years sober, Fred, is a mountain climb. However, you have said all along that this is only one day at a time. You have never criticized someone for going back out. In addition, you were always there to welcome them back, without a doubt. You married, not knowing what you were getting, indeed. Nevertheless, you stuck by me through all my defects and never once treated me like a bad seed. Love, Mary. Dad, I love you. Get 24 years more. As long as you are sober, it doesn't matter if we're rich or poor. Keep your life clean and stay away from the bottle. You start heading down the way, reversing full throttle. Love, Mario. 24 years sober. I am happy for you, Pops. You are big and cool, and I give you mad props. You are a changed man, and you love AA. You also take us to see you lead, even when it's far away. I want to congratulate you on 24 years. Let the rain fall down and wash away my tears. Love, Gianni. Love your fan club, Mary, Mario, and Gianni.
And it rained today.
What is the price tag? What is the price tag? What is it? How many meetings is it? How many meetings? How many chairs? How many drunks? What is it? What is the price tag? Without Alcoholic Anonymous, I have nothing. I have nothing. Without AA, I have nothing. I hope there's these two people walking down the street and they're talking to each other and they don't see me. But this is what they say if they see me. Hey, you see that person there? He's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I'm proud to be a member of AA. It's right here at the top. It goes everywhere I go. It goes everywhere I go. Like I said, I don't work my program in an AA room. I work my program in alone. I don't believe it's my thoughts and my anger. I believe it's my thoughts and my anger. I don't believe it's an outside job. I believe it's an inside job. It's not how I look on the outside, even though I do look pretty good. It's how I feel on the inside. And I don't know about you, but I feel good. I feel good. Thank you for listening with the Lord, sir. Our Father,
Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day.